Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, September 14th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Runnels.
Here.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Lubin.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Item three is our flag salute, and this evening, we have Amy Clayton. Is that true? Auxiliary Commander from the VFW. Post in Grover Beach will lead us in the flag salute, and then if you'll remain standing for our invocation, which will be given this evening by Pastor Robert Underwood from the First United Methodist Church here in Arroyo Grande.
Before stand the colors of our nation, would you place your right hand over your heart and repeat the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor, council members, people of Arroyo Grande, let us be in prayer. O God, to whom all time, space, and power and authority belong, grant unto the leaders of this fair city the wisdom to govern with justice and mercy, that your people may live in peace and harmony. Open our hearts to provide homes for the homeless, food for the hungry, rest and protection for the weary, hope for the hopeless, and relief for those in despair. We ask it all in your holy presence, O God. Amen.
For Veterans Day celebration. Also, in November, we have a Voice of Democracy that is the high school, the upper grades of the high school make a speech that they give, and this can carry, hopefully, a member of the student body all the way to Washington, D.C. in the Nationals and a good scholarship. If anyone who has someone going to high school that would like to participate, since it's no longer required that they be in the school, we're in the paper, and we invite students who are home study in the local high school, any of the schools that are in the district here that from the various churches, and those are invited to come and participate. They'll call the VFW members listed. We'll make arrangements for them. We also have one other thing that comes in November. If you see a person offering a poppy, you don't have to buy one. Please don't turn away. Come and join us in wearing a poppy. We ask only a donation. And if you don't care to do it, you get the poppy anyway. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We appreciate you being here. Amy, did you have something you'd like to say as well? No? Okay, we can't get you up here. Okay. Well, thanks to both of you for being here and leading us in the flag salute.
Thank you.
Good evening. That takes us to item number five, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item number six is agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item number seven, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and address the council on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would invite you to come forward, state your name, if you would, and your address, and please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as a whole.
Good evening. My name is Connie Dunbar. I'm a resident on Lana Lane in Arroyo Grande. I'm working with the the folks who are supporting Measure Q on the November ballot. And there's been a lot of information in the news. It is a confusing subject. We have some farmers from the Midwest going to be here next week, Wednesday the 22nd, to discuss their concerns and what their experience has been in growing genetically engineered food. And I want to invite everyone who is interested in the subject and who would like to know firsthand what the concerns are from those.
Council's had a chance to review, and we take action on these items as a group. Unless there is an item on consent that a member of the council would like to remove for further discussion or separate action, what is the will of the council? Okay. There are no items to be pulled from the consent agenda, so I will entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8J.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve items 8A through 8J on the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Nothing to read in there?
No, Mayor Farrar, nothing to read.
All right. Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Lubin?
Yes.
Council Board Member Reynolds?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Farrar?
Yes, as well. That takes us to item number 9, our public hearings this evening. We have one, consideration of use of State 2004 05 Citizens Option for Public Safety or COPS Funds. Good evening, Chief.
As soon as I get this on. What you have before you for about the eighth time over the many years is the annual public hearing for the distribution of the Citizens Option for Public Safety Funds or the COPS Funds. Since 2001, when the allocation was up to a minimum of $100,000 per agency, the city has been using the funds to fund a supervisory position, a sergeant position within the department, plus the upgrade of a couple of officer positions to senior officer. Originally, that was only supposed to go 3 years. However, given the economy, the state had eased the rules and had allowed us to go beyond the three-year. We'll now be going into the fifth year of that program. So what you have before you tonight is basically a continuation of the existing program to allocate these funds for the continued employment, you might say, of the sergeant and the upgrade of those two officers. There's also a small amount of interest left over from last year, $273, and under the rules that were put into place a couple years ago, that we must spend that money within a two-year period, so we would be entering the second year of that. So we've recommended that you allow us to designate those monies as special departmental funds and to be used for some minor purchases. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions or clarifications on the staff report?
I have one, Chief. What happens when these funds are no longer available with these positions that are being funded?
Then the council, in fact, I made a note in there, that decision is actually going to have to be made next year, whether or not the funds are still available. And that is how the city wants to handle the position that is currently funded, whether we keep that supervisory position, which I hope the city does, or we take some alternative steps. The program is a permanently funded program within the state. However, it does require an annual allocation. Some of the good news is the program has some...
Your 2005-06, you will be asking or looking at your budgeting as to how to support that position.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or clarifications in the staff report? Okay, this is a public hearing. If there's any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on item 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment on 9A. Councilmember Costello, why don't you start us off here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that this is an appropriate use of funds. It's unfortunate that it can't continue beyond this year, and I support the continuation of using the $100,000 as we are planning to do it. as well as carrying over the $273 and using that to fund other minor purchases, as the Chief has suggested. I can support this measure before us.
Thank you. Councilmember Runnels.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This program has worked fine or very well in the last few years since I've been here. And I can certainly see where the Chief has done a good job managing this when he winds up with $270 left over at the end of the year. So we should continue this, and hopefully there will be some word down from the state whether they're going to continue this at an early enough stage next year so that we can budget it a little easier. But I'm in favor of the program as presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no additional comments. I'm in favor of staff's recommendation.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
I agree. I think it's a good program. We need to move forward with it, and hopefully the funds will be there to continue to support those positions next year.
Thank you. I have nothing to add to that. I am supportive of the program, and I'm also in favor of taking the residual funds and putting them into the carryover and putting them into your, how shall I say, miscellaneous fund. So, special equipment fund. Okay. Anything to add?
Real quickly, I know I forgot, I think it was Councilman Reynolds made the comment about budgeting. These funds, the reason we hold this public hearing in September is these funds by law must be allocated completely separate of the regular budget process. That cannot be co-mingled with general funds, which is the reason it has its own account. And again, the law states we will hold this public hearing in September and not during the regular budget process. So the state is rather is a major stickler over that.
Thank you.
One follow-up on that, Mr. Mayor, if I may, please.
Yes.
Chief, when are they going to tell you whether these funds are going to be available for next year or not? You know, I know that's a $64 question, but if we got to do this in September, they're going to have to do it sometime prior to that, I would think.
I found out this year, the first week of June, that the COPS funds were definitely in the budget. We found that out much earlier, and we did a lot of other things in the budget process.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have something you wanted to add, Steve?
Oh, just to reemphasize, there's two issues with these funds. Is first, whether they'll be available, and then the second will we be able to continue to use them on this staffing? That's probably the bigger issue we're concerned about at that time. But in our long-range financial plan, we did program in an assumption that they wouldn't be and figured in some other alternative ways to proceed.
$73,000 carried over from the city's fiscal year 2003-2004 COPS program.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Yeah. Could I correct that? The council member said $237,000, and we might want to make that $237,000.
That sounds like a good figure.
It was a nice try, though.
Did I transpose that?
That's what savings.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Amended.
With that correction, I'm assuming we still have a second.
Second still stands.
Roll call, please.
I'm sorry. Mayor Pro Tem. Councilmember Dickens.
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens. Mayor Pro Tem Lubin.
Actually, it's Tom.
I'm sorry.
It's Councilmember Runnels.
That $230,000 got everybody messed up.
Councilmember
yes.
Runnels? Okay. Now who's next?
Me.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin.
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar.
Yes. Would you like a glass of water, Kelly, or something? I've never seen you do that. Okay. I'm not sure, but I think that takes us to 10A. Consideration of a second amended and restated affordable housing agreement with Cortland Arroyo Grande LP.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the Council and Board of Directors of the Redevelopment Agency. The Redevelopment Agency Board first approved a disposition and development agreement with Cortland Arroyo Grande LP for a 108-unit senior affordable housing project at the March 20th, 2002 meeting, which later had to be extended and also later had to be amended to accommodate a number of applications for state tax credits which were necessary to make the project financially feasible. At this time, the developer has received approval for the 9% state tax credit. The groundbreaking is being scheduled next month, so the tax credits are enabling the project to proceed at this time. However, one additional amendment to the DDA is necessary in order to specify the 9% tax credits rather than the prior agreement and application for 4% tax credits. In addition to that, staff and the agency's housing consultant have negotiated a reduction in the amount of financial assistance to the project from $800,000 to approximately $412,000, and that was due to a significant reduction in the amount of development impact fees that the developer will pay as a result of a recent change to the city's development impact fee schedule that was recently approved by the City Council. So at this time, we have included resolutions for both City Council and Redevelopment Agency Board approval in your council report for consideration. I want to emphasize again that the financial assistance to the project is funded entirely from Redevelopment Agency.
Grande, my name is Tim Mulrennan of the Rosenhaus-Bevisek Group. We're advisors to the Redevelopment Agency, which is assisting this project with their donation. This is about the fourth or fifth attempt that the developer has undertaken to try to achieve tax credits on and finance this project and get it built. And the Lord was with us this time. They've been awarded the 9% tax credits, and so now we're talking about a real deal. The 9% credits are more generous than the 4% credits that we were considering the last time we had this project before you at the end of 2003. But the construction cost increases at that time, even though we had been awarded the 4% credits, made the project feasible at that time, infeasible. The 9% credits that have been awarded provide more capital than the 4% credits, and therefore we were able to cover the gap that kept us from going forward in the past. The city has, in the meantime, as Mr. Adams has stated, been reducing the fees it charges to affordable housing projects, and so that has enabled us to reduce the assistance to the project from the $800,000 we were originally considering to $412,847. The total cost of the project is now estimated at approximately $16 million. Typically, on a project that costs that much, an agency would put in approximately $3 to $4 million in assistance. However, we've not been blessed with that amount of capital, and so that's been one of the issues that's been keeping us from financing it earlier. A few of the changes from the last agreement that we had before you are as follows: the assistance has now been adjusted to $412,847. Which, as we've mentioned, is due to the fee reductions. The 9% program requires lower income targeting than the 4% program, whereas on our last round, we had basically a number of market rate units in the project. Now the units are restricted to 50% and 60% of area median income. What that means is that for a 60% household, which a household size of 2 at 60% of area median income, they would earn $29,640, and a household size of 3, they would earn $33,300. That would mean that the rents would be $694 for a one-bedroom unit and $832 for a two-bedroom unit. This is a reduction from what the top of the rent roll was the last time we were looking at it. The 50% units drive rents of up to $578 for a one-bedroom unit and $693 for a two-bedroom units. And the household incomes that would qualify to occupy those units would be $24,700 a year for a two-person household and $27,750 a year for a three-person household. Three-person household would be targeted for the two-bedroom units. A two-bedroom household would be targeted for a one-bedroom unit. Of the units to be built, 131 to 60%. The agency will now pre-approve a list of general contractors to build the project. The current property owner, Mr. Larry Persons, whom we've seen here before as a proponent for the project, is a licensed general contractor. His firm, Cobalt Construction, is pre-approved as the general contractor on the project and in all likelihood will be building the project. However, the mechanism called for in the affordable housing agreement is for the developer to provide a list of contractors for pre-approval by the agency, and then they pick from that list. The 9% program is much more competitive than the 4% program, and as a result, we have higher nonprofit fees. One of the issues that makes one developer more competitive than another developer in the 9% round is the number of services that they provide to the residents. And so we have two nonprofits involved in this project. The general partner of the owner is the Foundation for Affordable Housing, which is a nonprofit entity, and they will be applying for a waiver of the obligation to pay property taxes, which is a significant financial benefit to the project. You lower the operating expenses, of course, by not paying property taxes. And then the More Than Shelter program will be providing assistance in life services to the seniors. This was pretty much required under the 9% program in order to be competitive. And between those two nonprofits, they'll be earning $19,000 a year. That increase in the nonprofit fees have been partially offset by a reduction in the asset management fee, which is paid to the tax credit investor. So the net effect of nonprofit fees going up, asset management fees going down, is approximately $2,000 to $3,000 a year in increased operating expenses. Previously, you may recall that we had considered putting the agency into the chain of title on the property to capture the increase in the value of the land and therefore have a higher local assistance to the project, which would have been important for the 9% credit application. We do not have that in the requirement now, so that the agency will not be in the chain of title whatsoever. The agreement acknowledges litigation that an affiliate of the developer is undergoing on another project, which I would categorize as cost of doing business. I would define it as resistance to an affordable housing project in another area. It actually does not affect the developer that we're dealing with, but an affiliate of the developer. But in the interest of full disclosure, we've referenced it in the agreement. That pretty much wraps up my comments. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have on the agreement. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Tim before he leaves?
Yes. Tim, you talked about the reduction in property tax or the waiver of property tax. Is that going to be all the property tax or a portion of the property tax?
I would describe it. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I'd say something on the order of
proposing. I know we have a nice plan put together, 30-year plan and so forth. How significant is this particular property in regards to this fee waiver, in a sense, for the property taxes?
I've not seen the revenue projections for the agency, so I cannot categorically give you a good answer. In light of what I consider to be the size of the redevelopment area, I would not expect it to be material.
Can I add a little bit to that? Just to kind of take you back a little bit, because this issue was something we discussed. The agreement's in place now, even though it's a change from the last agreement. It's actually kind of going back to the agreement before that agreement, except we took some of the land swap things out of it. But initially, that was our concern. When we started the project, we were starting with 9% tax credits. We were concerned about the loss of the tax increment, and that's where we began this to structure the agreement based on a loan that would have some repayment to it. So since we knew we were going to lose the tax increment, we structured it so we'd at least be getting some revenue back at some period in time from the repayment of the loan. So that's where we'll be getting our revenue from this project. Now, when the project switched to 4%, then that kind of went away because part of the project was no longer in the affordable categories that would be exempted, and we were going to get some revenue, and so we gave them some additional assistance to make up for that. So now, at this point, we're really going back to that original concept of trying to get the revenue back from the repayment on the loan.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a couple of questions. One alludes to what Steve was talking about. In going back to the original 9% proposal, which quite a while ago, and my memory doesn't serve me that well, what were our fee waivers at that time? Do you remember, either of you?
On the building fees?
On the building fees. What were we offering them at that time?
I don't believe we were offering an offset in the fee. I believe of the total assistance, $800,000, I believe approximately $400,000 was to be used against the city fees.
Well, that's the point I wanted to make, was in the 9% offering, it wasn't $800,000. We raised that to $800,000 when we went to the 4% offering tax credit. I specifically remember we had an adjustment in that number. And so I guess in a roundabout way, what I'm getting back to is right now our fees or our loan is going to be $412,000 at the 9%. And the purpose is being stated as the fact that we have reduced our building fees. However, if we go back to the original 9% proposal, it seems to me it was in the $400,000 to $600,000 range. There was a number in there. I don't remember what it was. And therefore, it seems to me that maybe this number is higher than it should be based on where we were then. And are we, in effect, helping him recoup his increase in building costs? That has taken same $400,000 reduction, we'd probably be in the $200,000 range instead of the $412,000 range. That's what I'm getting at. So there is a couple hundred thousand dollar variance here. And again, I'm playing with numbers I don't have specifics on. Having said that, just to make sure everybody understands that, this was started a couple of years ago. And during that time, interest rates have gone all over the place, mostly down and then now back up. And we're looking at a 3% simple interest for the next potentially 30 years. Is that a valid interest rate for the current economy and the direction that interest rates are going?
Typically, in the affordable housing deals that we're involved in, and they're throughout the state, many cities, many different developers, they're usually made in the form of a loan rather than a grant for tax reasons, and they're usually at a low rate. It's usually 3% in round numbers. You rarely see them at 5% or above because basically the projects can't pay for them. They're structured as a loan because if they were a grant, they would offset the cost and they would reduce the tax benefit, the tax credit benefit. And so we don't see the 3% that agencies typically charge on affordable housing loans as a rate that floats up and down with the market.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have, in a normal situation, as I read this, we start the 3% accrues every year, but we don't start getting paid back until the developers' deferred fees are paid.
Right.
Normally, how long does that take for the fees to be paid back?
They have to be paid back in under 10 years. Otherwise, it goes against them on the tax basis.
Okay. So within 10 years, we'll then start seeing some cash flow coming back into the city from this project.
Yes.
albeit small. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else? Yes, Council Member Costello.
I've got a couple of quick ones. One of the things you mentioned when you were talking about the affordable housing and the rates that would be charged were in the one-bedroom putting two people and in the two-bedrooms two to three. We're targeting seniors here, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And what kind of restrictions are there going to be on residency in this facility? And will a family of three, if they have a senior, be able to use this facility?
The you have to have one person in the household that's at least 55 years of age. The typically the cohabitants are a spouse or a caregiver. Usually, I'm thinking of state law, and I don't have it immediately in front of me. But we went through it on a previous project, and the way they define seniors is you're 55 years or older. Reason for you to be in the chain of title, because if you were in the chain of title, your risk exposure would go up. If God forbid there was anything with the land, contaminants, you could be exposed to it. So whenever you're in the chain of title, you take on that, even if it's for 30 seconds. If somebody who's looking to litigate it at some point in the future, they look who was in the chain of title and who has the biggest bank account, and they go after them.
Why did we even consider it prior to this?
Because the agency assistance was always relatively low compared to our competitors in the next tax credit program. And in the period of time that the developer owned the property, it had increased in value. And so the intent was for the developer to transfer the title to the agency at his low cost, the agency transfer it back at the high market value, and then that increase in value would accrue to the agency as local assistance and therefore make the project more competitive to other projects that in Sacramento had higher agency assistance.
Okay, we could have accomplished that, but then we would have opened the door to liability with that.
That's right, and so there was a lot of language and mechanisms called for to protect the agency.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one quick question. Tim, I don't know if this is your area or Steve. And it's a minor issue, and I'm sure we can address it, but I still want to make sure that we surface it once again. In all previous correspondence and staff reports on this particular project, when we reached the portion of the staff report or the document that dealt with the description of the project, there was always inclusion of the senior activity center. We've talked about the number of units, and we've talked about the financial aspects of this. I don't see any description in here. Maybe it's in here and I didn't see it. Kind of reinforce the fact that there is going to be a senior activity center here. So I want to make sure that that's still the plan and that that's going to be detailed in subsequent project material.
Yeah, we have a representative from the developer here. He may want to comment on that, but really this report was just to provide a summary as it relates to the agreement. The agreement really doesn't specify too much as it relates to the components of the project. That the project approval and the conditions of the approval of that project, that's where those items were specified. So nothing really in this document or approval impacts the design of the project. That's been all specified and approved. But do you want to mention if there's any? I assume there's no changes as I'm aware of since the project design was last approved.
My name's Casey Burke with Meta Housing. The services that will be offered, I'm not sure what the council had in mind with regards to a senior center. There's not going to be a senior center that's going to be really offered to the local community. It's going to be activities that are incorporated within the housing project itself.
Way alters the approved conditional use permit, which does provide for both the interior common area facility you've mentioned and the exterior recreation facilities, the parking, all aspects of the physical development will be in accordance with the approved conditional use permit.
I understand that the purpose of this evening's item is to focus on the new financial package. And I understand that's the thrust and the direction that this has taken. And although it does seem like an ancillary issue to raise at this point, I'm troubled by your comments because I do not recall that that particular facility was going to be restricted only to the residents there. So I think perhaps in a subsequent discussion on this particular project, we need to maybe go back to the drawing board on this because that's not anything that I recall. I understand that it was going to primarily serve the residents, but it would be available as well to the community on a scheduled basis if it was if a program could benefit the community at large. And as far as I'm concerned, that looms large with me.
Right.
So we need to revisit that.
Sorry to interrupt, but that absolutely could be incorporated. I just didn't want it to be confused with the senior center versus just programs that would be offered within the project itself. But the programs that will be offered can be made available to local seniors in the neighborhood that can come and partake. So to clarify that.
Okay. Maybe we want to just sort of flag that for the future as this thing moves forward.
We had handled this a little differently than the Camino Mercado project. That we very specifically specified the community use of that facility, which would be its primary function, and specified in the conditions details on how that would take place and would be operated by a community group. This one, as I recall, there was some discussion and some willingness by the developer to consider that. I don't know. I'd have to come back and check whether we locked it down in actual conditions in the project. But it sounds like they're still willing to work with us and come up with something to at least have some kind of shared use between some public access and facility itself.
Okay. Well, once again, for the record, the discussion that I recall was that in lieu of a large facility that Councilmember Dickens is intimately aware of and the effort that he's put forth over the years, our community center / senior center, which was supposed to be a fairly large accommodating facility for virtually all categories, but there would be a designated senior center within that large structure. That's not happening. So we looked at Plan B, and Plan B was to look at Camino Mercado. It was to look at the Cortland project. It was to look at facilities such as the regional center and look at some form of a alternative schedule that would make use of all three of those facilities to accommodate community events involving senior programs. That's the conversation that I remember. And so I would strongly recommend that we go back and take a look at that concept and reinforce. Seeing none, we will close public comment. Councilmember Reynolds, why don't you start us off here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One of the brighter things about this proposal tonight is that we're going to come out with $300,000 left in the kitty that we'd ponied up before, and I'm completely in favor of that. I will agree with your remarks about talking about the public use of the senior facility or the senior center or whatever handle they want to put on it for the general public. I think, if I recall correctly, you're right that there was some discussion about that. But the way this is structured now, I'm comfortable with it, and we beat it up a couple of times, and I hope we don't have to come back and redo this again. This is the second or third time we've had to amend it, so hopefully they can get going and go forward. So I'm all in favor of the way it's proposed.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have to echo what Councilmember Reynolds has just said, that I agree that I remember that we had discussions that this was going to be a common facility that was going to be useful to our senior population, both resident and non-resident of this facility. So I do think that we should revisit that when it comes to force again. On the other hand, I'm very pleased to see that they did get the 9% credits. I'm delighted that they've come back with it. I'm also pleased that we are loaning less than the $800,000 originally intended. And I can support this as it's been restructured and look forward to it becoming a valuable part of our community.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. this is certainly was a delight for me to see this particular project come back and actually did receive the 9% tax credit. I think that this project is going to serve our affordable housing needs in a great way. I was certainly has been supportive all along in regards to the disposition and development agreement. I think it's this type of thing that allows us to actually increase our affordability within the city of Arroyo Grande. And it's this kind of aggressiveness from the development community to actually go through the cumbersome process of actually getting these tax credits so that we can actually provide housing that's going to meet a greater need in this area. With our growing senior population and with our housing needs, I think this is just ideal. So I'm in favor of this evening of the disposition and development agreement. I'm encouraged by the project that we've already approved and seen this groundbreaking in the next few months. And in regards to the mayor's comments in regards to the senior center and the openness that was at least shared with the council to at least allow for community participation within this facility, I do recall the same. So I'd like to see that at least looked into. But this evening's particular item, I fully support, and I'm pleased to see it finally come to an end.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The only problem I've had with this project is that it hasn't been done yet. And I keep saying, let's get it done. And the staff knows that that's...
This particular project, I think, first and foremost, is the financial package that we've wound up with here is far better than where we started. I think there are a number of aspects to it that make it... much more beneficial for us from that aspect. Secondly, this is precisely the type of development I think that we're looking for. It's in our urban core. And thirdly, it targets a population that we have in our general plan, and that is our senior population and making housing more affordable. I think the fourth positive aspect about this is its location. Aside from it being in the urban core, it promotes what we call, and we're trying to encourage in that particular location, a pedestrian-friendly environment. If you look at where that project is located physically, it's right across the street from markets. It will be located very closely, not to one, but two pharmacies. There will be commercial frontage and eating establishments, which will increase along the gateway portion of Grand Avenue. All that means is that people who live there have a much better chance of being served without getting in their car and having to drive. And that's one of the really positive aspects about this particular project. So I've been supportive of this project as well from the outset for those reasons. And I, too, am looking forward to being present at the groundbreaking. So it's long overdue. With that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind, if staff could make a suggestion before you make that motion.
Sure.
Given the issue and concern, I think a pretty broad consensus on a desire to specify that the community room be available and open to the public, and our concern that I know that had been discussed and there was a willingness to do that, but I'm, without checking back at the conditional use permit, we're not sure how clearly that was specified in that document. I think before going any further, this approval probably would give you another ability to more clearly specify that. I think after this is approved, it's much more difficult for us to go back. So Tim has actually drafted a recommended addition to a motion that if it was included, we could more clearly specify in this agreement approval that that is this agreement is contingent upon that occurring.
Okay, great. Let's hear it.
Again, it's not a perfect mechanism, but it's supposed to tie the CUP community centers, community room senior center into this idea that it's eligible for general community use. So you'd go ahead and approve either one of these, subject to and conditioned upon the senior center community room within the project being available to general, reasonable general community access and use. So your approvals would be conditioned on that.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Should it be senior?
We're not sure what it's called within the approval. It's a. Rob, is it a senior center or a community room or both? That's why we're using both terms.
It is a common area, but it is a senior complex. So if your intent is to make it focused.
It's going to be programmed from within, and a lot of activities will be geared for the residents. But what we want to do is have a reasonable number of those activities be opened up to the public and shared for the public at large. That's the way I'm perceiving this, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Why don't you restate that?
Subject to and conditioned upon the senior center being made available for reasonable general community access and use.
Define reasonable.
Well, we put the word reasonable in there for good reason, because it's a very broad, ambiguous term, but it does provide some wherewithal to enforce.
Well, if I understand the Mayor Pro Tem, would it be more appropriate to, instead of a reasonable community, how did that state reasonable?
Access and use.
Reasonable community access and use for senior activities.
Well, in light of the fact, yeah, I think that's a good idea, but we call it a senior center, and it's only, as I understand it, it's eligible for only seniors, but that's fine. General senior community access and use.
Thank you.
Okay.
There we go.
All right.
Add the word senior.
That sounds a little better. And I'm, again, as trite as this may sound, I'm glad we're doing it now. Any other comments, questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'll move that we adopt a resolution of the Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency approving the second amended and restated affordable housing agreement between the agency and Cortland Arroyo Grande Partners, LP, with the amended condition, the language that's just been adhered to by the council.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lubin?
Yes.
Board Member Reynolds?
Yes.
Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
And Chair Ferrara?
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we accept a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande consenting to the approval of the Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency of a second amended and restated affordable housing agreement between the agency and Cortland Arroyo Grande Partners, L.P., with the language as suggested by council.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion on this motion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. And thanks for the wordsmithing, Tim. Okay, that takes us to new business, item number 11A, consideration of a request by developer of the County Busick Tract, map number 1789.
Mayor, members of the council, this item is a referral by the County of San Luis Obispo of a project that adjoins the city at the southeast edge. It's depicted on the overhead. This is the undeveloped site for what is called the Busick Tract 1789. There is a access road off of El Campo called Falcon Crest, and then Coast View Road, which is a private gated road system. The developer has negotiated an agreement with the Homeowners Association of Falcon Ridge as his initial project proposal. In March of 2004, there was a referral to the city with a very short time frame. The Planning Commission helped craft a response to that, discussing the concern about access from El Campo intersection, which is considered deficient and unsafe. The draft environmental impact report to discuss that as less than significant with mitigation, and the mitigation was a contribution to the county, but no timetable for actually correcting any deficiencies. As a result of the comment from the city, the Planning Commission went further and suggested an alternative could be to reconsider, and this would involve the city council authorizing access from the city side with Castillo del Mar, the access street that connects with Orchard, being the means of access under either condition, whether it would be fed from the county side or from the city side. The local street system would terminate on the property so that the access would be directed for normal access purposes one direction or the other. The connection would still exist at either end for emergency access purposes. There has been previous approval, obviously, and a history that goes back some time with the Vista Del Mar subdivision. It was suggested that before additional access might be obtained, that additional relief to Orchard, which is a long cul-de-sac, if you want to call it that, because there is no outlet once you get beyond the intersection here. This is a gated private road across the back of the high school. It was suggested that if the high school consider allowing that access connection, that would provide for secondary access both to the high school and to the neighborhood and to the subdivisions. However, the high school has not endorsed or accommodated that access right-of-way or easement across their property. The high school also owns some undeveloped property uphill from the athletic fields and the high school plant itself. One other aspect of this secondary access across the back of the high school is it then traverses the west edge of the high school property, which has an awkward intersection at Valley Road with an acute angle driveway. There has been conceptual discussion, and in your packet there's several alternative alignments. The city's preferred alignment would basically come in further south at a safe right-angle intersection, but that would require some portion of the Taylor property, which is currently agricultural designated in the city, to be traversed, and up to an acre and a half might be affected if a road crossed in this vicinity. There are some alternative alignments that could be proposed to the city, that the Orchard alignment be allowed as an access using Castillo del Mar. He offered to mitigate by cash contributions potential impacts to the city if access was permitted from the city. The amount of the initial offer was approximately $450,000. In subsequent communications, it has been increased to $632,000 and change. And in the recent communications, which were received in your packet this evening, it has been explained that he has attempted to pursue other alternatives and is in a time frame that requires council direction as soon as possible. With that, if you have any specific questions regarding the aerial or the alternative alignments, the proposal requested by the developer, JH Partners, is that the city allow access to the end of Castillo del Mar, which would then access Orchard, and accept $613,632 for the purpose of mitigation of traffic and related impacts. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to try and respond.
Okay. Steve has suggested that I touch upon the bottom line alternatives. We are looking for your direction, and therefore one alternative would be to direct staff to prepare a city council for city council consideration at a subsequent meeting, a resolution approving the developer's request to abandon the existing access restriction, that is, open the gate, allow access through Orchard Street, and accept the offer of mitigation funding, to direct staff to pursue improvements to Orchard Street, and to further negotiate with Lucia Marr Unified School District and John Taylor for the secondary access right-of-way across the back of the high school to connect with Valley Road, and provide direction to staff on preferred access alternatives. Secondly, an option would be to approve the developer's request to abandon the existing restriction and allow access through Orchard Street, and accept the offer of mitigation funding, but direct staff to negotiate with the developer to allow for other uses of the funding. And there's a series of alternative uses that could be made that, if you have specific interest in those, we can discuss. A third alternative would be to direct staff to negotiate with the developer for an increase in mitigation funding. A fourth alternative would be to reject the developer's request to abandon the existing restriction to allow access to Orchard, and the offer of mitigation funding, which would require the project to obtain access through the Falcon Ridge Estates, and further request the county consideration of requirements for traffic development impact fees to be dedicated for future improvements to the El Campo Highway 101 improvements. Clarification appears to eliminate the sixth alternative as a option he feels he has explored and has not been able to resolve the access through Lucia Marr Unified School District or John Taylor, and does not intend to pursue that further.
As you can see, there's a lot of different options, a lot of different issues involved in each option, a lot of pros and cons to each option. There's been a lot of discussions that staff has been involved with all the parties. And so, yeah, our main purpose this evening is just to get some hopefully clear direction from the council of how you would like us to proceed with this.
Are there any questions in the staff report? Clarifications? Councilmember Dickens?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rob, what are the projected daily trips generated by this development per the traffic study that's been conducted on this development?
They're referenced in the latest communique from the developer, about 12 peak hour trips based on 16 homes. Typically, a single family home will generate 10 trips per day, so 160 trips would be the estimated total traffic. 12 peak hour trips would be the estimated impact with whatever primary access is allowed. And not a substantial traffic volume in comparison with Falcon Ridge, or if you want to look at it in the broadest context, the Mesa traffic that utilizes the El Campo intersection and Los Barrios Roads. Valley Road high school traffic has been reduced as a result of the opening of Napomo by many times that magnitude. 12 trips would not constitute a significant traffic volume by itself. Cumulatively, however, it is a concern, and it was a concern with Vista Del Mar. The whole access around the high school is deficient to city standard.
Rob, you mentioned earlier in your staff report about the reciprocating agreement with the county in relations to if indeed the city were to move forward and to eliminate our 12-inch barrier, is really what it is, at the city line, that would then be substituted, I'm assuming, between the tract 1798 and the Falcon Ridge tract. How would that be worked out, and what control does the city have in the future to maintain that restriction?
The city can certainly open its access conditionally. And the understanding and negotiation with the developer was that the cul-de-sac pattern that was proposed to access from Falcon Ridge would instead be flipped, and it would be a cul-de-sac accessed from Castillo del Mar and Orchard. There would be a gate, and there is a gate, at the Coastview Road end right at this point, and that gate, would be maintained as an emergency access control gate. Under emergency conditions, the residents could knock the gate down and exit if there was a event that would require their evacuation and this route was closed.
The county decides, well, shoot, why not just have the Falcon Ridge folks come on down as well and open that up. Then we would be placed in a position, most likely, if it's a reciprocal condition, to actually then put that barrier back up. And politically, I think that would be extremely difficult to do.
The city could possess the outlot at either end. So if it was important to the city to control the access to what would be a city street, it could occur at the end of the cul-de-sac here, or it could occur at the south boundary of the property, but there could be a physical barrier that the city would have a one-foot access control strip across the full width of the road right-of-way, so it could not be extended without city approval. That was the purpose and the method that was used in the approval of Vista del Mar. It's a public street with a one-foot outlot at the end of the street that the city has placed a gate on.
I agree, but I also disagree because I think it's county property, but I understand what you're saying, that there does lie the capability of probably doing something like that. It's a little more cumbersome, but okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, clarifications in the staff report?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Rob, you indicated that possible sharing of the impact fees with the county versus city for road mitigation and whatnot. Has the county ever given the city any fees from projects that are in the county adjacent to the city limits for traffic mitigation for us?
I think you're going to get a two-part answer.
I have some experience knowing that the county did require some fees from the Canyon Crest project that's off of Stagecoach. They required that the developer pay a certain portion of the city's impact fees for transportation, and they did that. We did collect those.
Was that because that was the only way they had in and out?
I believe so, yeah. A portion of that track came down Stagecoach.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But if this were to go out Falcon Ridge, for example, that would be we wouldn't get any impact fees regardless then?
Currently, we would not. We have, since the adoption of the 2001 general plan, entered a memorandum of understanding, and one of the topics of that memorandum are to try to negotiate impact fee increases in the unincorporated area that would contribute to city infrastructure, particularly circulation, but also other infrastructure. That has not progressed rapidly. It's been about 2 years, and we're in the stage of developing a regional traffic model that would enable the network and allow the fees to be calculated. Since the 2001 plan, every referral that we receive from the county, we have requested that city impact fees for both fire service and for traffic be conditioned as mitigation measures. To my knowledge, the county has not imposed that. There are much larger developments occurring on the Mesa that contribute to our road system deficiencies, Valley Road, Halcyon Road, et cetera. And there are certainly discussions has been challenged before, and the comments that the city made were reflected by Caltrans, SLOCOG, homeowners within the Falcon Ridge area, the Homeowners Association. So it certainly is a questionable conclusion in the EIR that there is no impact or that it has been mitigated to a less than significant degree. I think using that impact report, the county and any challenge would have to address what is being done to mitigate even the small cumulative effect that 16 more homes might have on
the regional road system, let alone the interchange. And they didn't address the deficiencies of El Campo Road or the use of Los Barros Road and Valley Road to get back to the same destinations where most of these residents want to go, which is the city of Arroyo Grande. So the road system either depends upon a deficient intersection or impacts predominantly a city road system that is not currently being mitigated. So I think it is a legitimate request, and it would depend upon how aggressive the city and other entities want to be about what happens if the county still approves it and declares that there is no significant impact. It might take a challenge to resolve it.
Now, let me understand this. The developer's proposing to either get access through Orchard or access through Falcon Ridge.
Correct.
What would be the likely, let's for the sake of argument say that we did provide access through Orchard, and a year from now, Caltrans closes the at-grade crossing at El Campo. Would there be additional pressures brought at that point to permit the connection at the other side to allow the access through onto Falcon Ridge also?
There may be. There are certainly alternative means of gaining access. You could still gain access to the southbound leg of Highway 101. You would not be able to make exiting movements to the north or access it from northbound 101. So some of the traffic that would come from Falcon Ridge might desire an alternative route than Los Barros Road, El Campo Road to Los Barros and back to Valley Road. But that would be entirely within the city's control if you retain an access control and accept the public street with only the outlot precluding direct extension. I think it would also be important that the Falcon Ridge homeowners that have alternative accesses other than El Campo. They use Falcon Crest all the way down to Los Barros Road as a collector route. So much of the internal traffic doesn't go to El Campo. It already goes to Los Barros. They certainly understand day to day that that's a deficient, dangerous intersection. So they use it when it's maybe going home, but might bypass it leaving home.
Conversely, say we did not approve the access through Orchard and the access was granted through Falcon Ridge and El Campo is closed as an at-grade crossing. Does that not only the new project but also the people that live in Falcon Ridge to have an additional access way back through Orchard?
I think that's back to the first
We would have control, but yes. I'm not talking about the control. I'm talking about the desire and the impetus that there would be to put some sort of proposal on the table to have us grant access back through.
Right. I think the answer to the question is yes, there would be increased pressure. The city has considered as a part of its overall general plan circulation element and rejected the concept of a collector route that would use Orchard, Castillo del Mar, Coast View Road, and Falcon Crest to make effectively a frontage road off of El Campo that could bypass the freeway and come through Orchard. That was not and is not a part of our circulation element. It is intended to be a local access street, and it's a question as to where the local access street would have a controlled gap. And emergency access connection would still be possible through that gap. Either way, I think we're seeking to have an ability for secondary access. Otherwise, this would be an unsafe circulation pattern. But only for the purpose of emergency would we want a through route based upon previous studies. And again, plans can be changed by the city council and the board. But the Homeowners Association has certainly expressed very substantial reservations to making that road a regional access route between El Campo and Valley Road or El Campo and Fair Oaks. They do not want a collector route traversing them.
There would be pressure, but we would have the authority to to restrict that pressure.
And let's go back to one more question. Back when Vista Del Mar was approved a couple of years ago, what was the intention? What was the main access going to be?
I was not here at the time, but I would say by virtue of the stubs that have been created, that it was intended that Castillo del Mar, which stubs to this property, might be extended and that it would continue across the back portion of the high school, undeveloped portion of the high school property, and connect to Valley Road, as well as connect to Orchard. So there would be basically all of the access alternatives, with the exception of a connection to Falcon Ridge. It was not stated that it would extend and connect to Coast View Road.
I kind of recall back when this came before the – I was on the Planning Commission, chair of the Planning Commission at the time. Matter of fact, the only reason I supported the project at the time was because it was going to connect down through Valley Road and Orchard was only going to be the secondary access, and that never happened. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, clarifications?
Mr. Mayor, I had some follow-up questions, if I may. Okay. Rob, do you know the amount of money the developers agreed to pay for improvements at Falcon Ridge as part of their agreement?
I know generally that there is a dollar contribution, some reimbursement of legal expenses, and some substantial improvement requirements, but I do not know the cost of the estimated improvements. I would estimate them, and the developer estimates them in the latest communication as equivalent to the cost that he is proposing to the city, $600,000+.
It was my understanding that it was closer to $800,000.
If I read the agreement that has been approved by the Homeowners Association, there are references to improving Coastview Road, Falcon Crest, including some bridges, some lighting, some drainage. I think the developer has not provided, and Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association has not provided the estimate. I think it is certainly fair to estimate that it's at least 600. I feel, based upon the equivalent road costs within the city, that it might be close to 800.
And I guess my point is that if we were to agree to this, it's almost in and of effect, it's actually cheaper for the developer to go through the city than it would be to go through Falcon Ridge. And my comment would be that if they're willing to pay closer to, I think it's over $800,000 to go through Falcon Ridge, that that we might look at increasing our impact fees that are currently on the table. Just a comment. Rob, do we know the amount of impact fees that the county plans to receive as a result of this project for traffic impacts?
That has not been resolved, fleshed out. They do have traffic impact fees. The impact fees, as I understand it, from a engineering department source, is closer to $17,000 per unit. I think that that generally goes to the identified county road system, which currently includes Los Barrios Road improvements. There is no factor plugged in for El Campo or for El Campo interchange or for the private road system. But if the county collected $17,000 per 16 units to go to primarily Los Barrios Road, we might be able to convince them to increase the amount that would be involved to include some improvements to El Campo and the interchange as requested in the comment on the draft EIR. We may be able to ask them to collect fees that would come to the city for both traffic impacts and signalization impacts within the city based upon the same circulation. I think it could approach again or perhaps exceed the figure that is referenced in the proposal of $32,000. So it wouldn't surprise me to see it double if they actually get into cost calculations of proportional contribution to those road improvements.
What I like to suggest is that that there's probably a likelihood if the county is going to be collecting fees on this particular project, and in the meantime, the access is going through Falcon Ridge, that while we work on a solution to a Valley Road extension, which I support with the caveat that there's a lot of details to work out with both the property owners, the school district, and so forth. But once those details are worked out and agreed upon, and we have an identified project that, in my opinion, will actually and it's been on the books for as far as I can remember in regards to creating this particular relief, this additional traffic relief to Valley Road, that at that point, the likelihood is that we could go to the county and request participation for funds to actually create regional traffic circulation that's going to actually enhance this particular area. I guess my question would be, do you think that there's likelihood in the future, once a project is actually identified and in the queue, that we could then partner with the county from a funding aspect to actually see this project come to where we've always tried to envision it?
I believe that the recent letter from the developer indicates that if this opportunity to allow access from the city is not completed soon, an agreement reached with the city, that they will pursue their agreement with the Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association and approval by the county. It may put the city on the defensive, and there aren't many success stories where the city has been able to get the county to collect impact fees. So I would be somewhat skeptical that they would set the precedent with this particular 16-lot subdivision any more than they would impose it on large developments on the Mesa.
And maybe my point's not being clear. I'm not suggesting that we get the county to participate in setting aside impact fees directly for city purposes. What I'm stating is that in the future, when a Valley Road extension to Castillo del Mar is in the queue, we have a project study report completed or whatever is required to actually fund this, that at that point we then can negotiate opening up additional access, knowing that the vast majority of that is not going to go down Orchard Avenue. We could even look at closing that off. I don't know whether that would be something we could consider, but I see Herman out there. He suggested that in the past. But nonetheless, we have then a reasonable relief route that would then not only benefit the city, but would also benefit county residents, and we could then pursue a partnership in funding at that particular time. And I guess what I'm asking staff at this point is, what do you believe that there is a good likelihood that we can make that collaboration effort with the county in the future once we have an identified project?
Based upon the proposal, I think the developer would pursue his cul-de-sac, and there would not be a direct street connection from this 16 lots into the city in the future. The right-of-way would have a gap, and it would not be possible to make the connection without two cooperative lot owners providing additional right-of-way. The Homeowners Association in Falcon Ridge would still be a factor in terms of where would it go and what traffic would it incur.
So you're saying with the current project proposal in the county that it would actually preclude any future extension of Castillo del Mar?
The configuration that has been proposed does not link Coast View Road to Castillo del Mar other than for emergency access purposes. It has a couple of hundred feet, as I remember it, a gap in the normal street right-of-way, and it narrows down to simply an emergency access connection between the stub end, whether it comes off of
Coast View Road or whether it comes off of Castillo del Mar, there is not a physical public street connection between the county and the city being offered by the developer.
Okay. Councilmember Reynolds.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think it needs to be pointed out the fact that originally this Vista Del Mar and this Project 1798 were all under one contiguous ownership that was somehow another half of it was put in the city limits when the city was established years ago and half of it was left out. And it was all sold as one particular parcel. And many years ago, they talked about a couple hundred units up there rather than what we've got today. When Falcon Ridge was proposed, or Falcon Crest was proposed, the Coast View Road was stubbed into the back of this property that you see on the map there, and it was intended by the then developer to connect it all the way through to Orchard. And you know that goes back 25 years ago or 20 years ago. In connection with the talk about going out to Valley Road, at some time that is going to happen. It's going to be a collector road that goes, takes Fair Oaks Avenue and runs it right over the top of the hill somewhere along the line. But the school has a monumental drainage problem behind that where we're talking about, and as soon as they try to cross that, it's going to really aggravate it considerably, I would think. And so that's something that I don't imagine that the developer is going to want to tackle a multi-million-dollar drainage problem to solve this traffic thing. So that's my comments.
Thank you. Any other questions or clarifications on the staff report? Okay. Seeing none, we will open this for public comment. And again, we would like to allow the developer who I see in the audience, if you have any comments at this time. Also, see a representative from Lucia Marr. If any of the other stakeholders are interested in making a comment, that would be appropriate.
Mr. Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, members of council, staff, my name is Carlo Alfon. I represent JH Land Development. Maybe I can clarify an issue about that road that goes through there. When track 2207, the Vista Del Mar track, was done, Terry Chief Fabish was very adamant about having a temporary access road through the county property, and it was a condition of our map, and there's a 10-inch based road there that goes to Falcon Ridge or Crest, whichever you call it. But and the reason was that if there were ever a fire in that Falcon Ridge track, that the access, it would probably be addressed by the City of Rio Grande Fire Department, and that would probably be the quickest access to that. So that's why that road was, that you see there, was put in. Our original proposal and the county proposal shows a cul-de-sac about 200 feet short of the Falcon Ridge Gate with only emergency access there. If we were, I don't know, actually, it was the city that brought up the safety issue at El Campo. And we said, okay, if that's, you know, if you're more concerned about that, then let's explore some of the possibilities. And we said, what if we reverse the track? And Rob and I had some conversations. In that case, the cul-de-sac would be on the opposite end, and the access would be through Vista Del Mar. With regards to the Orchard Avenue access and the Taylor and the school issue, we've been to Mr. Taylor several times, as you know, and I personally spoke with him prior to the for lack of a better term, the parking lot summit meeting that you guys had. And I spoke to the CMR school district subsequent to that meeting. I wasn't able to attend that meeting. I was at a funeral. They were both adamant about not allowing access at this time through either one of those projects. Mr. Taylor said that, I mean, his opening remarks were, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I don't need the money. And we discussed some option, and his closing remarks were, don't sit by your phone and wait for a phone call from me. So, I mean, that was his, you know, those were his comments. The school district, I met with Ms. Larson, who's in the audience. We discussed various options. She informed us of various options that the school was considering for that 10-acre piece and for various plans that they had for the school property. And it seemed like even if they were to agree to something at this point, it would take like 4 to 5 years. And right now, they don't know what they want to do with the 10-acre piece. They don't know whether they want access to Valley Road. She was very gracious in thanking us for putting in the road and the utilities, but, you know, made us aware that, you know, it was school property still. And so we've explored that ad nauseum. I don't know what else to say. I mean, if you have any more questions, I'd be very happy to answer them.
Any questions?
It boils down to, as far as Mr. Councilman Dickens' question, the $800,000, I don't know that there's an established number. There were tasks that were outlined. There wasn't a dollar amount. In Mr. Scardino, his letter, he mentions that the amount that we're offering is reasonably comparable. I think if it were a matter of some legal fees or an extra, you know, whatever, I mean, within a reasonable range, I think that could probably be accommodated, but to make the, you know, to get those fees comparable to what the probably, my guess is it's probably going to be more like the $700,000 range than $800,000.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward, please come to the podium and state your name and
Herman Olave, 222 West Cherry. And we went through all this before when the Vista Del Mar was put up. Now, the developer was supposed to maintain and repair Orchard Avenue, which was never done. And he made other commitments. In fact, my wife and I took a walk up the hill the other day. There's a mention of bicycle lanes that were supposed to put in. They were put in. They've taken out. And then I've questioned quite a few of the neighbors in the neighborhood about their feelings of having Orchard Avenue as an access for this development. And some are for it, some are against it. But most of them are concerned, will that mitigation fee be used to repair and maintain the streets, the California Street and Orchard Avenue? That is our concern. Now, most of them will oppose it unless those fees are used for that purpose. Now, if you take a walk up Orchard Avenue, right in front of 525, there's actually the pavement is gone. There's just some rocks sitting in the street there. And I don't think it'll stand another, being used as another construction road going up without some type of maintenance. And then I talked with about some of the school officials and that road that was put in behind. In fact, I've got all of the papers at home where this whole project, Vista Del Mar, was in the process of going under development. And some of the, there's letters from the school after the road was built that they wouldn't allow the road to be used. Now, and then there's also papers that show that the five different options of access to the track, and Orchard Avenue was the fifth option. They had, so in fact, if anybody wants to see the papers, I can bring them in as evidence of to what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ole. Please come on up.
My name is Al Fritz. I live in Vista Del Mar, and I'm a little concerned about a traffic problem which hasn't been brought up at all, and that is the intersection between Orchard and Fair Oaks. It's a particularly bad intersection now, and if more access is granted to Orchard Avenue, it's going to create a very bad situation, especially in the morning when the students go to school or when they come home from school. There's both very heavy traffic and pedestrian traffic at that time. And I would seriously recommend that you consider at least putting in lights at that intersection if additional access is granted.
Thank you. Anyone else? Please come forward.
Hi, good evening. I'm Bruce Monroy. I live in the Vista Del Mar development as well. And I just wanted to say that I'm also concerned about the traffic issue in the area. I think that the access route from the development to Valley is intriguing. However, the reality is if that would be used, I don't think it would occur. Right now, we all use the Orchard Street because that's the only way in. It is the quickest way to the city and to the freeway system and coming home. If there is access route that is opened up in that vicinity, I don't think it would be used, and I think the Orchard Street area would be impacted dramatically. 16 homes don't seem to be like a lot of homes, but when there are already 38 homes in the area, an additional 16 will definitely impact the area, and that's one concern that I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, we have everyone queuing up. That's fine.
Good evening. I'm Bob Aknafisi, a local attorney, and I represent a group of South County residents who call themselves South County Residents for Access. I will just refer to them as Access or my clients through my presentation tonight. Access is made up of individuals who live in Area Grande or nearby in the county. What these individuals have in common is a shared vision of improved circulation throughout South County. Of particular concern to my clients is the unacceptably dangerous condition of the El Campo 101 intersection. It is our belief that both the city and the county must cooperate to ensure that any future residential or commercial projects in South County will be part of the solution to this problem and not exacerbate it. Let me just get straight to the point of tonight's hearing and begin by expressing my appreciation for the planning staff's exemplary work on this difficult issue. The city staff has done a great job of analyzing this project and really assisting the county in making making the proper environmental analysis. And thus far, the city staff's position, the city has shown great leadership in critiquing this project, and I think it's been completely vindicated. Its position has been vindicated and backed by SLOCOG and Caltrans and, to some extent, county's own public works. So that has been exemplary. Simply stated, my clients agree with the city staff's position in the AIR that the traffic from this project cannot be directed through Falcon Rest and the county to the El Campo 101 intersection. Following the mandates of CEQA, any project or alternative such as this one that would direct traffic from this project to that already impacted intersection will be considered a significant adverse impact and must therefore be rejected in favor of any of the other alternatives that would avoid that impact. A cash contribution towards some indefinite time period, for an indefinite time period, where there isn't in place any system or any studies that ensure that improvements to El Campo will be done in a timely fashion, is simply not going to be enough. So really, I think access must be either through Orchard Avenue or and or access to the road, to Valley Road. We contend that the preferred alternative is really a road extension to Valley Road, as has been discussed tonight, which can which will connect to Valley Road to Orchard eventually. This alternative will go a long way towards improving traffic generally in this area, and but we understand that at this point, this implementation of this plan requires cooperation of the school district and Mr. Taylor, the private individual, both of whom so far have not really committed to anything. We are convinced, however, that in time both of these parties will join in the city's effort to make this Orchard Valley connection a reality. Reading the developer's letter that was attached to staff report, we're delighted that now it appears that they seem to be committed to directing traffic through the city instead of the county, and they seem to recognize that that they must make a substantial contribution towards creating this Valley Road Orchard connection. So we urge the city to continue to lead the way in order to make this vision a reality. Whatever particular solution you will come up with tonight, I'm certain that it will send a strong signal to the county that the project can't be approved unless access to the project is found, the solution to the problem is found from within the city. My clients have asked me to assure you that they will stand firm on this point and are prepared to challenge the project should the county's approval ignore the persistent problem with El Campo intersection and the city's position in this regard. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi. I'm Diana Larson. I'm Deputy Superintendent of Business for La Silla MR Unified School District. And I would just like to address the issue from the standpoint of where we have been with this and where we could see it going eventually. First of all, I'd like to direct your attention to the 10 acres that Mr. Strong pointed out that is belongs to the school district. It's I think he's highlighting it. That is undeveloped, despite the fact that it looks kind of terraced there. It is a relatively flat piece of property, and the school district has not decided, the board has not decided that they want to do anything with it as yet. They have not had it on an action agenda. They have not discussed it, closed or open. And before they, quite frankly, could do anything other than to use it for school purposes, they would have to go through what's called a 7-Eleven committee, or I'm calling it that, a group of community members, no fewer than seven, no more than 11, who would study the uses that, to which it might be put and make recommendations to the board. And it would severely limit the kinds of uses any kind of surplus property would go through. We have about a half an acre up in Pismo Beach that we're beginning that process on, and it is a couple of years' worth of time. So any disposal of that property, if that were the end result or development in some kind, unless it was going to be used specifically for school purposes, is a couple of years away. Now, we have had some proposals by the agricultural teachers who proposed to make it into a school farm and move our maintenance and operations facility over to where the school farm is at this point, because, as you know, we're heading into renovation of the Oregon High School. And in order to do that renovation, we're going to be needing to put the tennis courts down over the top of where the maintenance and operations facility are right now. We can't very well cohabitate. It just doesn't work real well to have those balls bouncing around. So we have to find another place to put them. It's been suggested that they should go up there. I really don't think that the people in Vista Del Mar want to be looking down at the maintenance operations facility down there, but they're already looking down on a farm. So I'm not sure exactly what will happen. I will tell you that that property is ocean view, and so you can judge for yourself what 10 acres would bring of ocean view property. It's not ocean view like Pismo Beach, but it's still ocean view and therefore makes it much more valuable. And it might be that the board would eventually want to sell that off, and it might be developed if that was the case. Along with that would have to come the opening of that road in some manner. Mr. Taylor is, I'm sure he can speak for himself, but he has made his position clear. He has that 4 or 5 acre parcel down there that is farmable only because it's relatively adjacent to other pieces of property that he farms. that the board has not discussed opening that, other than the meeting that they had last year as a joint meeting with the city council. They have not discussed opening that road. And, you know, I know it's been said before, but I want to reemphasize that that road belongs to the school district. It's totally on the school district property from one gate all the way down through our property. So it's not something that we've given a right-of-way to the city or the right-of-way to Vista Del Mar or the developer or anything. I would not want to speak for the board, but the last few times I've heard individual board members speak, they have not been in favor of opening that road. I suppose there are things that could influence them to do that. And should a proposal be made, we would certainly take it before them because that would be what we'd have to do. But at this point, there is no plan by the board to open that road, pending what they decide to do with that 10 acres. So that's part of that. As far as the traffic coming down Orchard, personally, sitting there in the district office, I have two problems with Orchard. One of them resolved tonight, and that is the Cuesta College traffic and parking in front of all the houses. And so I think we resolved that by restricting the parking in front of the houses now. I don't know if you knew that. Until 8 o'clock at night instead of just 5 o'clock, they'll still be able to park on the school side of the property. So that will be part of it. I've gone down that street at 7 o'clock at night, and I can't believe the cars in front of the houses. So I guess it's indicative of a good Cuesta College program, but it's also indicative of a big pain to the residents around there. The other piece that I have more concern about is that at this point, that street in Vista Del Mar does not belong to the city. And as such, our high school students are parking on it. And they're not getting ticketed because it's not a public street, and the city police have no authority on that street. And while the majority of our students are well-behaved, law-abiding students, there is always the few who decide that it's better to come down a hill at 50 miles an hour screaming it all the way, and I have concerns about that. So I'm more concerned about that traffic than I am about opening it to another 16 homes on our side, and I think that our board would share that concern as well. I don't think that there would be a significant concern about 16 additional homes traffic, but recognizing that the Fair Oaks intersection is significantly affected by school traffic, and although we certainly have taken off a lot of students by virtue of opening Napomo, I would tell you that this year's enrollment at Arroyo Grande High School is almost exactly what last year's was, even though there are no longer 300 students that are seniors. We have such a large freshman class coming in. So we've helped because we brought in younger students who don't have driver's licenses yet, but wait 2 years. Wait a few years. Any questions for me? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah. Better be quick.
My name is Mike Murphy, and I live right on the corner of 403 Orchard Street in Fair Oaks. I take the impact off the freeway. I think everybody's aware of that.
Physically.
And the traffic issues there are horrific, and we all know this, and it's a very difficult area because there is the school there, and it's a tributary for many areas to come through. But this 16 homes is probably going to bring maybe, what, another 100 cars to the area with guests, family driving, kids, things like that. Somebody's going to get killed on that corner real quick. Two accidents in the past 2 years, or 1 year, excuse me. Last summer I had, I got some pictures here if you want to see it, if you remember the wall. If you don't want to see it, that's fine. I brought them anyway. But that was very close to T-boning another car. There was a driver that was coming through that intersection. The lady came off the freeway and just missed that other car by a little bit and put about $8,000 worth of damage to my wall. If my wall wasn't there, the car would have been in my garage. I built the wall. It was built before. I rebuilt it, built it stronger, and I'm glad I did. A light, straightening out that doggone off-ramp and making it T-bone into Orchard Street instead of a house is something that's going to happen one day, more than likely. I know Caltrans controls the freeway, and the farmer that has the piece of property adjacent to it has denied access through that piece many, many years ago. But there's, I'm not sure who I need to go to. Maybe it is Caltrans. But at any rate, if we have a developer who wants to build 16 more upper-level homes. There's quite a bit of revenue there to be seen, and maybe that one of the conditions of building this thing could be a traffic light. If at the least a traffic light, straightening out the freeway probably is a wish list from you know several years from now to be the best. But a traffic light is something that the city can implement. It's a strange four-way corner because of the way the freeway comes in. It's very confusing. My son's been hit there twice, small little accidents where he was stopped one time for a pedestrian crossing the street, and somebody else came through and just didn't even see the stop sign at all and just went through and hit him. I've been in several close calls myself. Backing in and out of that driveway is probably the worst driveway on the whole block. The people coming from the school don't see the issue with us waiting for 15 or 20 minutes for the line of cars to go through. You have to kind of keep poking in and out of there and pulling in there is really hard because people don't understand that corner. Or they're not paying attention to it, or they're on their own page or trying to go home. Whatever the issues are, that is a very, very serious corner. Valley Road was the same way. We put a light there finally after one of the kids were killed. It's going to happen. I've seen school buses hit up there. I've seen fender benders like crazy. Probably on an everyday basis, I hear skid marks at least three or four times where people almost hit each other. And that's on a daily basis. So if nothing else, if we are going to develop more of that area back there, that corner really needs to be mitigated some way to make it safer. And that's really the only issue I have. I think that we need to build houses in this area and that we don't have much land left to do it in. And if that's a buildable area, then let's bring some more residents in so we can get a hold of so we can start getting on top of some of this state requirements for housing. I understand that, but I don't really like the idea that we're going to impact that street with more traffic. But there must be 5,000 or 6,000 cars go through there a day. I don't think another 100 cars is going to change that. But we certainly have the opportunity now for somebody to fix that corner a little bit better. And I think that opportunity needs to be addressed with the builder. And I'm a builder myself, and I sometimes don't like the idea of how many conditions that are put on my projects, but we do it, and it's necessary. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this item? Did you have additional statements?
Yes. If there's no one else, I would like to just briefly comment on some items that Mr. Olive brought up. One of the reasons, first of all, track 2207 was never conditioned with resurfacing Orchard. One of the reasons we went through the school property, which at the time the school and us felt that it was a win-win situation, we wouldn't have to disrupt Orchard Avenue, and we took a more circuitous route to pick up our utilities off of Valley Road. So, however, some of this funding that we've offered up as contribution could be used for Orchard, for repairs on Orchard. As far as the bike lanes, we promised bike lanes and took them out. We put the bike lanes in, and the city asked us to take them out. Why, I don't know, but it cost us to put them in, and it cost us to water blast them off. So maybe Don has an answer for that. I don't know why they were removed, but it wasn't reneging on our part. We had no objections to the bike lanes being there. It cost us money to take them out. So, and as far as the last gentleman's comment, yeah, part of this money could, the funds that we're offering could be used for signalization at that intersection. Ms. Larson made the comment about ticketing cars and the road not being accepted. There's one punch list item left. There was a homeowner that built improvements over a sewer access road that was put in. The road is actually still there. It's underneath the, there's a 10-inch base road there. And they planted trees and did some stuff to block the access. So we're in negotiations with them now. This engineering department has given us some data on material, like a block material that, that can be put underneath and then grass on top. So that's taken place. Once that item is done, everything else has been bought off. If I'm not mistaken, is that correct, Don? And that's the last item. Once that happens, you can accept the streets and you know, restrict the parking as was requested.
And thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, close public comment and bring this back to the council. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one off?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for staff, first of all, in regards to Orchard Avenue. Do we, Don, would you happen to know when Orchard is plugged into our pavement management program for programmed improvements?
Orchard being a residential street, we don't have the capacity to get federal funding or state funding for that, so that would strictly have to be some sort of city funding. So that's I don't have the exact year, but it's not in the near future.
But it is programmed in our pavement management system, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, and it's slated to be overlaid.
Okay. So eventually we'll certainly address the deficiencies on that road. Okay. Don, also, do you happen to know what the level of service is on Fair Oaks Avenue?
At the intersection with Orchard?
I think that either the intersection or that specific segment. There has been comments about the fact that, you know, we're only talking about some insignificant additions or cumulative impacts on the particular intersection, but it was my understanding that when we did our traffic study that particular area, it was that area and then the Briscoe area that actually at certain peak hours was a level of F or D or something like that, I believe.
Well, certainly during the peak hours of when the school is in session, that very, very heavily impacted, lots of delay, and the level of service goes down. That's only for those periods of the day. I don't know what it is. The rest of the day, I'm sure it's not as bad.
But there are certain times, peak hour times, that it is actually below the level of service of C, which is our requirement.
I would think so, yes, based on the volume of traffic there, yes.
And can you refresh my memory and maybe address to the public in regards to what our control of the intersection of Fair Oaks and Orchard Avenue. We had a presentation by Caltrans approximately 6-9 months ago. I don't remember what it was. And we looked at a whole variety of different alternatives, even went into modeling that particular area with a signalization and so forth. What is the outcome of that, first of all? And then secondly, what is our control of that particular intersection?
Well, certainly we have control over the three legs of that intersection. The fourth leg being the off ramp is something that's under the jurisdiction of the state, Caltrans. So we have control over three parts of that intersection: Fair Oaks and Orchard. As you brought up, there was an extensive look and investigation by Caltrans. They did video things and they did some modeling, and we looked at signalization specifically at that intersection and signalization down at Traffic Way and Fair Oaks. And they modeled both of them, and they modeled having one signal in both signals and that sort of thing. And during the peak hour, I don't think it helped all that much. I think it made things worse for the other intersections at Station Way and Traffic Way. So that wasn't one of the recommendations that they brought forth, and I think the council, after looking at the modeling, was understanding of that. So.
Yeah, that was my understanding as well. And also, I believe that there would be a problem. For instance, if we were to let's say we were to signalize the three sections that we have control over, ultimately that would mean that really the fourth would have to be signalized as well. And there's a significant queuing problem if cars are backing up on the freeway because they can't get through the light. And that seems to be a problem, especially at the a.m. peak hours. I don't think Caltrans – I think Caltrans might have a problem with that. Was that part of our discussion?
Yes. Absolutely, that the fourth leg would have to be signalized.
Right.
If the other
three – Can't you signalize three legs of it?
You probably couldn't do that. And I think that once Caltrans did get involved, and if they got involved financially, then they would want control of the signal. And in those cases, like in many of the other cases, they give preference to the freeway system. So they would want the freeway system to clear before the traffic on the surface streets was allowed to go.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate that. My comments are primarily for clarification, because it seems so simple for the city just to go in there and utilize possibly the dollars that are being proposed here from the current developer to just go in there and fix that intersection. Unfortunately, it's not as easy as we would like it to be. There are some, in my opinion, some real significant regional circulation issues that we need to address around this particular area, one of which is the Fair Oaks and Orchard intersection. That has to be dealt with. That is a nightmare. And that is, as Mr. Murphy talked about, I thought your wall was hit this weekend again.
It was.
Yes, it was. Okay. I don't know how you live there, but nonetheless, I appreciate the wall, because I think that's helpful. Keeps the cars. Yeah. Keeps the cars out of your bedroom, I'm sure. But nonetheless, that particular intersection is a nightmare, and it has a lot to do with just the offset. It'd be easy enough to say, well, let's just go ahead and align the two. Caltrans won't allow us to do that because that's not standard. So there's a lot of other issues that we need to look at. It needs to be looked at, though. The issue of providing regional circulation, not only around the high school, but to access Vista Del Mar, to give folks alternatives and how to as to getting into the city, around the city, and so forth, is a primary concern of mine. And ultimately, I've been an advocate of actually not only punching the Valley Road through I think that would help circulation, but I think there are some long-term benefits to actually continue that road over to Traffic Way. And basically we're doing a major interchange, taking the southbound freeway, moving it up, and being able to punch a road underneath, which would eliminate really the ability or the need for people to actually go down Orchard if they want to access the freeway or getting into the village. That would be your quickest route, not through Orchard Avenue. And there could actually be the ability of closing the Fair Oaks off-ramp, which would create a whole other circulation element. There may be pros and cons to that, but that needs to be explored, as my colleague's laughing at me. But it's even if that was online, it couldn't happen for 10 years from now. It's a major undertaking. But the emphasis that I want to make is this, is that, in my opinion, we're playing catch-up. And what we're talking about tonight is really a result of poor decision-making in the past. And we have some tough decisions to make as to whether we allow more cumulative impacts to deal with this particular area, or we bite the bullet and say, this is the right thing to do, and ultimately we need to really focus on regional traffic circulation around this particular area. This is the Vista Del Mar is one. We've got the county track that's another, possibly. Who knows what's going to happen with the school district property. We have Mrs. Haddock's property next to that, and, of course, my colleague next to me owns the property next to that. all of which in the next 20 years will probably have some sort of development that will need access to Valley Road. And it's better for us to start looking into the future instead of having to try to make up for past mistakes. So from my perspective, improved circulation in this area is key, and it has to be a focus. Secondly, we talked about cooperation between the city and the county. I'm a big advocate, of course, continuing to cooperate with the school district and the needs that they have in their facility uses. But the key word is cooperation. And what I find interesting is that the way the county tract is being developed is it actually eliminates any kind of future circulation, regional circulation for the area. So once the county track goes in, it looks like it's a done deal. And I find that to be uncooperative between the county and the city, because I think there are some potential opportunities in the future to actually collaborate and actually address some circulation issues. So I think it's really a misuse from the county's perspective to approve a project that doesn't allow for future circulation. So with that, I'd like to propose that we certainly cooperate in the future in regards to our traffic circulation and address all these issues. And I know that they're cumbersome, and I know there's a lot of issues, whether it's regarding the prime ag land that John Taylor owns, or whether it's access over the traffic way underneath the freeway, and how that relates to the El Campo interchange and so forth, and specifically the Fair Oaks and Orchard interchange that needs to be addressed much sooner than later. With that, Mr. Mayor, my recommendation this evening, and the only conclusion that I can come to, is that I would direct staff to continue working on proposals to create additional traffic relief within that area. I think that's important. I think it's a policy decision that the city has in their general plan. It's something that we need to continue to look at innovative solutions in relieving the traffic problems around the particular area. And I think that's important for us to keep those options open. In regards to the proposal from the developer, I would have to deny that proposal at this particular time. I think that we're just compounding an issue that's already bad, and unfortunately they're going to have to take their second route. I wish that they would be a little more proactive. I know they've tried, and I've heard it time and time again, but I think they're trying to take the path of least resistance. So at this point, I would deny the developer's request to have city access and to give us a sum of $600,000+ to put towards I have no idea what in the near future. It's my contention that we need to put infrastructure first before development. We always seem to be you know, the tail is always wagging the dog in this area, and we need to start reversing that. So I guess just more from a philosophical standpoint, I can't continue to add more traffic to an area that's already burdened. So that would be my recommendation.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I recall, when the excuse me a moment. When the project that's in there now first came before us several years ago, there were a number of problems trying to get it aligned and trying to get access in. And I recall that there was a great deal of effort put into connecting through to Valley Road, and that was going to happen. And very reluctantly, I supported the project at that time, and only because of that. Since then, we've had the opening of Napomo High School, which has alleviated some of the problems with traffic through that area. However, as was pointed out tonight, our freshman class is larger than ever, and the relief to that circulation system around there for the high school is short-lived. and doesn't seem to have really done a whole lot. We have a number of difficult problems, a number of difficult intersections there. The intersection of Orchard, Fair Oaks, and Highway 101 off-ramp is a problem that is waiting to kill someone. It's going to kill someone eventually. However, I recall when we had the Caltrans presentation in here, I was rather impressed with the modeling they did, and they showed that a traffic light wasn't going to solve the problem there. That would be my first suggestion. Well, let's put a traffic light in, let's fix the problem. Their contention was the traffic light doesn't solve the problem. So even if we had the ability and didn't have to deal with Caltrans to say, let's go ahead and put a traffic light in, and we had the funding to do it, apparently that's not going to solve the problem in and of itself. It's going to take realignment of that intersection. And it doesn't sound like that's going to happen in the very near future either. We have the problem of El Campo Road, the at-grade crossing, which has come up before a number of times and is going to continue to come up over and over and over again. Again, we have an intersection waiting to kill someone. We had a meeting fairly recently where Caltrans and SLOCOG were present, and they said don't count on them for any support in getting an intersection or getting a freeway interchange there in the near future. It's just not going to happen, at least not with their assistance. So even if, and that's kind of frustrating, because even if we had their complete cooperation and agreement, we would still be 8 to 10 years out on any kind of freeway interchange there, something that we need today without this project being considered. Then we have the Valley Road extension, and I understand the problems we have there, the difficulties that are there. I think that that's a logical extension that needs to go in at some point. We're going to have to make sure that it goes in with a minimal disruption of any viable farmland that we still have there, but yet it still needs to go in there, but it doesn't seem to be happening. And again, we can't mandate from this side of the table that it does happen. So as much as we need to see it in there, as much as it makes sense, it's not going to happen. And then the fourth factor here is the access back through Falcon Ridge. If we turn down the applicant's request to get access through Orchard, they're going to turn and try to get access through Falcon Ridge, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. Let's assume they do. That's going to increase the traffic that goes south and goes back over towards El Campo and then does connect back down to Los Barros. Ultimately, if that happens, and I think at some point sooner or later, we're going to see where they're going to want to connect back the other way also. It may take 15 years, it may take 20 years, 25 years, but ultimately that circulation will continue back through and it will connect back over to where Orchard is. At this point, though, I had problems 4 and 5 years ago, 2 years ago. I still have problems with what's going on Orchard. And anything that adds cumulative impacts in there, I can't support at this time. So although we have the opportunity to receive some sort of mitigation dollars from the applicant that could be used perhaps to assist in resurfacing Orchard and working on maintenance on Orchard, I don't think that that's worth the additional problems right now. So my recommendation at this point would be to also direct staff to continue to work cooperatively with the county to try to alleviate traffic problems here, to work with the county and the state to work towards an interchange at El Campo, but not to support connecting through and allowing this project to connect through to Orchard.
Thank you. Councilmember Reynolds.
Well, I'm going to be on the outside of this whole thing, I'm sure, but I've been there before. You know, I'm quite surprised to hear my colleague over here that's been very positive about saving all agricultural land, prime one soils, to want to take and run a road across Mr. Taylor's property, which is very prime agricultural land. We were in a process last meeting of criticizing the county for taking land down in the lower end of the valley to straighten out interchange. But that being said, you know, El Campo Road is probably the least safe intersection of anything that we have in this area. Granted that Fair Oaks Avenue Orchard is a bad intersection. It's scheduled at some point in time, Don, what, 10 years away to be realigned and taken care of. And I think there's a lot less likelihood of a major, major accident there with a multitude of people getting killed than there is at El Campo Road. And I won't use El Campo Road. I think it should be one of the things I agree with the staff report here is El Campo should be closed, period. At any rate, you know, I believe that the city has an opportunity to take some dollars that we don't have available at this point in time for road repairs for the entire California Orchard, West Cherry, Arroyo Avenue down there and improve that and fix things up so that the people that are putting up with this traffic all the time from the school, from all the development, are going to have a decent road to to drive up and down on. As far as the traffic light goes, that intersection is bad for a certain period of time in the morning, in the afternoon, but I go through it quite frequently. I change my schedule when I can to go the other way. I can't even get out of my driveway sometimes, and I'm quite a ways away from that. And if you have people coming across the parking lot from behind the school, which this Valley Road connection would entail, well, then that's almost impossible to get out because they'll be lined up from there all the way to the light. So Orchard Avenue, you know, was designed for a residential street. There's no question about that. It wasn't designed for a major thoroughfare. But when we started talking about Vista Del Mar and that whole project about a few years ago, there was a proposal made that we draw a line on a map from the Mike Ladies Mortuary right straight across the hill to where El Campo Road would tie into the freeway. Just draw a line on a map so that when it was developed, there could be a corridor set aside so that we would know that that's where the traffic was going to go at some point in time. That was ignored. Now we have a zigzag situation where the road's going to go a lot of different directions, and we're really not going to accomplish anything until we do get something that goes all the way to the freeway from there. But I would support the developer's request, and excuse me, because I think it's going to be an advantage to all of us in the future. And we know that at some point in time that intersection at Orchard and Fair Oaks is going to be realigned. So to sit here and turn down that much money that we don't have any other resource for at this point in time, I think is wrong. That's my comments.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
It's great, Tom. We have to turn down the money.
Yeah, well, it looks like it.
What I see happening here is basically no alternative. It's been said by a lot of people, so I won't go into a lot of detail on it, but going down Orchard is not an alternative. Going to El Campo is not an alternative. Going to Valley Road right now is not an alternative. So this parcel is basically landlocked and has no exit. So what do we do as a city? Well, right now, and for the foreseeable future, we have no control over Valley Road connectors. The school district and Mr. Taylor are controlling the property that makes that happen. We heard tonight that it could happen in a couple years from the school district, or it may not happen. I mean, we've seen the school district sit on properties for a long time. We heard tonight that there are people who don't want it to go through Falcon Ridge to the El Campo interchange for a big reason, which is El Campo is a mess, and I certainly agree with that. I don't take it. I try to stay away from it as much as possible. However, Falcon Ridge currently uses El Campo to go south and then turns around and comes back, Los Barrios back into the city if they want to go north, those that don't want to take the risk of crossing the freeway to go north, which I wouldn't blame them. It appears to me that at this point, the city's obligation is to determine what's in the best interests of our citizens today, and certainly in the future if we have any control over that. We have no control over the county whatsoever. We can make recommendations and we can negotiate and we can do whatever we want on an advisory basis, but we have no control. So what we do have control over is the traffic within the city. And I'm not inclined to increase the traffic in the city with a county project. And if this is a county project, then the county needs to resolve the traffic problems. So from my standpoint, I prefer alternative number four, which is to reject the developer's request and to request the county to consider traffic mitigation fees, in a nutshell. I think it's great to be bought off and get the 600 and some thousand, and maybe we can pave Orchard and we can do a few other things, but they're just fixes right now. They're not going to solve our traffic problems. And I, too, remember the Caltrans presentation, and they will not put a signal on that Fair Oaks off-ramp because of the queuing problem behind it. They were very specific about the fact that during school hours specifically, that would be backed up onto the freeway and they would not deal with that. So at this point, my recommendation is to use alternative number four and reject the developer's request.
Thank you. I want to start off by commenting on some of the meetings that we had. The developer indicated that we had a on-site meeting. We actually had a couple of discussions involving stakeholders on this particular project. And I want to clarify a couple of things. First of all, as was indicated in the staff report, the environmental impact included commentary from SLOCOG and from Caltrans with regard to the impact of this project, regardless of how it's routed on El Campo. That seemed to be a focus for them. County planners during that discussion, who were also present and could follow the rationale in the discussion, I looked at them. They nodded in assent. I can't imagine that that good rational planning would be ignored as it relates to circulation by that planning staff. And I'm hoping in the future as this progresses that they won't. They also took to heart many of the concerns with regard to circulation that the city had. They also have on staff a traffic planner, someone who's working on the regional model, as I recall, for the county. And I'm pleased to listen to my colleagues' recollection of the model that was presented to us months ago. Actually, I think it was probably over a year ago by Caltrans. It obviously had an impact on all of us. It had an impact on me. And as a result of that, what we attempted to do with the county staff member who's working on the regional traffic model was connect him with the person from Caltrans that developed this. And if they were to do that, then perhaps they could better understand the position that that the city has had with regard to the problems surrounding this particular area. The other stakeholders, if you will, that were present at the meeting obviously was the school district. And Ms. Larson came up this evening and talked about the status of things with the school district. And I'm gleaning from all of this discussion that the school district, at a point in time when a decision is made as to what is going to occur behind the school, I believe they will, as a board, recognize the need for circulation because they are going to contribute cumulatively to the intensity of use in that particular area, that circulation segment. They're going to have to do something about it. We could not envision, and I don't think the school board could rationally envision that intensity of use also using only Orchard as an ingress and egress. It makes absolutely zero sense. The issue was brought up by Council Member Runnels about the farmland. And Mr. Taylor rarely comes to these meetings. Maybe he watches them on television. I don't know. But I guess my dialogue during the course of that meeting was twofold. First of all, yes, it would be beneficial if we could use his farmland to improve infrastructure. That's the good news. The bad news is, that's not altogether bad news. The bad news is there's another challenge. That challenge was put in place to preserve our prime farmland. So this is not just a question of taking farmland. It's a question of taking farmland and replacing it by other farmland somewhere. We have ordinances here that protect prime farmland. If you're going to take it, you're going to replace it. So that strategy was made very clear. We are not going to cut through Mr. Taylor's property and take his farmland unless there is a mechanism in place, and none of them we control. So where does that leave us? If we look at that traffic model, as I recall, it wasn't just the modeling of Orchard and Fair Oaks. It wasn't just the modeling of Traffic Way and Fair Oaks. They also considered the signal at Valley and Fair Oaks. And I cannot recall the number of variables that they ran in this model, but it was very impressive. If you shut down circulation with a red light in one direction, something happens on the other side of the model. There was no combination that we could come up with that would allow for a smooth flow without queuing. Queuing to the point where we had congestion. So the other aspect of it is the leg that Caltrans owns, they would never consider signalizing an intersection that was not in alignment. And so as far as I'm concerned, the signalization aspect doesn't work regardless of how much funding we had in place to address it. And I guess to summarize, and I think, you know, we need to really consider this, and Councilmember Dickens brought this up. For as long as I've been on this council, we have had to live with circulation that has stemmed from decisions that have been made in the past, land use decisions, intensity of use, zoning, that have been made before this council was certainly convened. And previous councils were convened. We've had to live with those. The manifestations of some of those decisions have resulted in the traffic problems that we experience throughout this city. The only way we can begin to turn the tide is to begin to make our own policies with regard to land use and zoning and circulation and begin to enforce those. We're now in a transition. I think this council is in a transition where we're starting to verge into that type of an environment. The impacts of the decisions that have been made in the past and the manifestations as they result in negative traffic circulation, I think we're over the edge, or I should say we're over the top of the hill and we're on the downslope now. Traffic circulation, if it doesn't increase or if it gets worse and or if it doesn't decrease and gets worse into the future, that's going to be on us, and it's going to be on our decisions that we make today. Future councils are going to have to live with what we do today. So the other issues with regard to cash contribution, if you're looking at any kind of a viable mitigation measure that's going to address this level or this magnitude of a circulation problem, $600,000 is a drop in the bucket. It isn't going to do a thing, nothing. intend to use that property behind the school, looking for opportunities and windows in which we might partner in acquiring a right-of-way through the back of the school. I think we should also continue to work the agricultural issue with John Taylor. And, you know, I've gotten a different impression from Mr. Taylor, and we've had a couple of conversations, and I think there are some strategies that we can continue to pursue. I don't know if they will bear fruit, but it's certainly worth a try that may deal with the replacement of ag land, which is required by our ordinances. So I would like us to continue to do that. I would also like us to perhaps take another look at some of the pavement management priorities and make sure that Orchard and the surrounding streets, that pavement, that surface there is problematic. And to the degree that we can help that move along, I'm not sure we can, but to the degree that we can perhaps focus on that would be something that I would recommend and support. With regard to the developer's request to use Orchard as ingress and egress for this particular project, I would deny that request. I would also direct staff to continue to monitor the situation as it moves to the county and to ensure that the concerns of the city are voiced to the county and that we have representation at key meetings if this should happen or when this should happen to go to the Board of Supervisors, and that we maintain an open dialogue with our 4th District Supervisor, Ashajan, and make sure he continues to understand what our concerns are, along with the county planning staff. So those are my observations and recommendations. With that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move the rejection of the developer's request to abandon the existing restrictions to allow access through Orchard Street and offer of mitigation funding, requiring the project to obtain access through Falcon Ridge Estates, and further request county consideration of requirements for traffic development impact fees to be dedicated for future improvements to El Campo Road, Highway 101 improvements, along with traffic impact fees to the city of Arroyo Grande, if appropriate, and the inclusion of all comments that were made by the council members for monitoring the process through the county. Does that cover everything?
Well, we'll see. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that motion.
Discussion?
Because the process has begun, we have an overall project. The next step of that project is conducting PEA and ED, which is what we at this point would be trying to generate money to expend on. So
you're saying that the project study report as it is now, as it moves forward, we have, I believe, four different alternatives. By this motion, we're actually saying whatever alternative is ultimately identified as being the alternative accepted, then that's where we would promote those funds going towards.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
No.
Councilmember Diggins?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
Mayor, could I just make get a clarification on that motion? Because it included a number of other comments. I just wanted to clarify, because some of those comments directed staff to continue to work with John Taylor and the school district, and to continue to see if there's an option to move forward, some kind of connection there. So my assumption is that you're directing staff to continue to work on that portion of it also.
My assumption in the motion made by the mayor pro tem was that his intent was to incorporate the statements that I guess the majority of us made with regard to working on better circulation in the area, and that certainly is part of it.
Great.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming that's the direction we were going.
That's the direction.
I just wanted to clarify what our charge was.
And one additional comment on that, if I may, Mr. Mayor, you better go out and make sure you got all the property owners involved in it and not exclude any.
Yes.
Because there are several that have been excluded.
Okay, we have a request for a short 10-minute break, 5-minute break. Okay, 5-minute break. We're going to recess for 5 minutes. Council is back in session, and we are at item 11B, consideration of alternatives regarding Caltrans Highway 101 landscaping project.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. Caltrans is now under construction with a landscaping project within the city limits on Highway 101 from Traffic Way to Oak Park Boulevard. This is a $1.2 million project that includes planting of trees and shrubs and ground cover that will be served by an automatic irrigation system. Water to serve the project was the proposed usage or estimated usage is about 10 acre feet. The irrigation for the project is primarily a drip system, and as I said, it's estimated to consume about 10 acre feet of water per year. Now, staff is working with Caltrans to reduce the water consumption, and so far we've identified a 10% water savings, as indicated in the memo that was provided to the council from Caltrans. The project will result in an improvement to the appearance of the 101 corridor through the city and at no cost to the city. Therefore, staff supports the project and is working with Caltrans to identify ways to further minimize the water consumption. While this is water connections are normally do not require council approval, staff would like to get council direction given the policy implications regarding the city's water supply at this time. So, with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions of Don on this?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Don, in regards to the total acre feet that's going to be looked at in this particular improvement, at first outset, it looked like it was going to be 10 acre feet per year or something around that. And I know there might be some flexibility. There might be more in the first years to get this established and so forth. But overall, we're talking about somewhere right around 10. And then we looked at some reductions. That reduction would be, I'm assuming, somewhere between maybe 8 to 9 acre feet. Is that what I'm hearing
that's
now?
That's correct. That's their estimate this time, yes.
Okay. In regards to putting that in perspective, on a general basis, what does one household use per acre feet per year?
In the city of Rio Grande, it's about half an acre foot per year for one household of four.
So if we were to talk about 9 acre feet, we're really talking about 18 homes, okay, comparatively speaking.
Comparatively speaking, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Got turned off there somehow. Don, after reading the staff report, I had two questions. The first question is, what happens if we say, no, you can't have any water? That's the first question. And the second question is, what happens if we say, you have every right to do this, use your own water?
Well, my question. To answer your first question, would it, if the city does not provide a connection for the water, they have indicated to me that they would probably stop the project at this point and not continue with the construction of the landscape improvements. And the other question that you had, were, using their own water, they don't presently have any water connections down at this point. They do have a water truck that they've been using to water the existing landscaping, and they would they one of the reasons for doing the project is to try to discontinue. At this point, we think it's somewhat unlikely that that would come to fruition.
Okay, thank you.
What would happen if they bought water directly from Pismo or Oceano, since they have a little extra water in the interim, and we wheeled it through our line that way?
Again, that's something that may require some further investigation at this time. We haven't discussed that with anybody from those agencies.
Well, I'm just throwing that out of thought. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for years they've been watering the landscaping with a truck, with their truck, mm-hmm. and considering the, and they're using the water from down there at the Soto Complex, correct?
I believe they're using some of the water from their maintenance facility in San Luis that they fill the truck up in.
Yeah, well, whatever. They're not mm-hmm. bringing. They're not getting most of the water from our system.
That's correct.
Okay. I wouldn't have any problem with them continuing to use a water truck and let them get the water down there from the Soto Park like all the rest of the purveyors do when they want to water roads and whatnot. But mm-hmm. you know, I've got a real problem with them only reducing the amount of water they're going to use by 10% with their mitigation measures for the irrigation system. I don't think that, you know, considering the shape of the lake and where we are with our overall capacity, that we need to be giving water right to water the plants along the freeway at this point. A couple of years when we got plenty of water, that's a different story.
Yes.
Could you bring your graphic back up and show us the area we were talking about? I think if you just move the mouse, it'll probably come back. It's probably asleep.
I hear something. Here.
Well, my question is exactly what's going to be the advantage to us of this project being complete and the landscaping going in? How much of an impact is it really going to have?
Well, I think it's going to be a significant improvement over the existing landscaping that we now have. And as I read the plans, most of the improvements are centered around the intersections, one of them being Grand Avenue. The improvements include flowering shrubs, ground cover, and trees, so that there's going to be a significant improvement to the plant material that's out there now, adding some color. Right now, I think we have, just based on my review this afternoon, there's what's mostly out there is ice plant. So as far as the ground cover go, I think there is no ice plant proposed as part of this project. The plant material is a significant upgrade from what's out there now. So I think as you proceed either north or south on the 101, when you hit this area, you're going to, visualize a distinctly improved landscape along the freeway, along the corridor.
I think a lot of it comes down to what importance do we put on, you know, improvements along the freeway as far as the impact it has as an entrance to the city. And
okay, thank you.
Any other questions, clarifications?
I just want to – I was asking Councilmember Reynolds.
Well, actually, 50 gallons would be too much. You know, that'd be 3,000 gallons.
What would be the well capacity to basically equal 10 acre feet per year. And we're saying somewhere less than probably 50 gallons per...
Yeah, 40 gallons.
Which is actually a fairly small well.
You'd have to have a big tank to put it in, so you had the capacity to pressurize it. Okay.
Does that sound correct,
Mr.
Engineer?
Councilman Reynolds will probably know a little bit more about wells than I do, but I think that's probably about right. But again, you'd have a well in the aquifer that we have our other domestic wells in.
Where were you saying that the actual placement of the connection would be at this point?
It would be at the intersection of West Branch and Vernon Street.
Okay. Thank you.
If you were to put a well at Oak Park, in about there by back of Carl's Jr., for example, and let them pump in and let them use that, that might be some alternative.
A well was discussed. That was brought up to them. Of course, that's a significant cost to the project. And so, but that was discussed as one of the alternatives.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I have another question. Would it be possible to condition the approval of this, future use of this, to us maintaining a certain level of use in the city? Should we exceed that, they can no longer draw water?
Are you referring to putting a maximum?
Yeah, I think that's you could possible. Take this back to when we had the energy shortage a few years ago and they shut all the lights off along the freeway. They didn't have electricity, so they shut the lights off. So this could be the same thing. Or do you remember that, Sam?
I don't remember that.
You don't
I'm
remember?
I'm old enough to remember that one.
I'm sorry.
You sure it was lights and not kerosene lanterns?
Putting a limit on the...
Remember, I'm shutting it off.
You do?
I do. So... just to clarify, Don, they would not put... would they consider putting in the drip system... but yet not drawing down our water, continuing to irrigate it in the traditional way until our water situation improved? I mean, would they consider doing that?
You mean using water trucks?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The water trucks will...
I mean, we're sitting here and we're talking about, a 95% plus of capacity draw. Mm-hmm. For domestic use, and now we're talking 10 acre feet for a state project, even though, yes, it's going to improve our aesthetics through the city, it's still a state project, and they're going to take down
potentially add over 200 acre feet of water to our supply. So I think that there's adequate that there's enough water there. I know that we're at approaching our ultimate supply, but I think that there's room enough to increase to provide for the landscaping in this case.
I'm confused when you say we're already using 4 acre feet.
Yes.
How are we doing that?
There is a meter that's being used down at the Oak Park intersection or the overcrossing. That landscaping at that location is being served by a meter from the city of Rio Grande that uses about 4 acre feet. Traditionally, over the years, has used about 4 acre feet per year of water.
Is it in Rio Grande completely, or is it in Grover as well?
No, the landscaping that's being fed by our system or by our meter is strictly in the city of Rio Grande. There is other landscaping at that intersection, but it's being fed by Pismo Beach.
Mr. Mayor, I had an additional comment in regards to this discussion as well. The other concern that I have, Don, is that we're actually using potable water. We're actually using water that's been treated for drinking purposes. There's been talk in the past of utilizing, let's say, reclaimed water for landscaping. In other words, the landscaping doesn't have to be at the same water quality as our drinking water, but we're using drinking water to actually irrigate this particular landscaping. I can definitely see some benefits if indeed we had a well that could serve the purpose to actually not having to treat the water whatsoever. You're just pumping it and pressurizing it, and off we go. Is there a problem with that from your experience of using water right out of the ground table? In other words, instead of having to use potable water, is there the ability just to use well water without treating it for landscaping purposes?
Yeah, I think that the quality of water that we have, groundwater that we have, would be sufficient or a quality that would be okay for the landscaping. There's a couple of things that you have to think about as far as locating a well in that area. Where is the best location, and how do you get it piped over to where you need it, that kind of thing. So I don't think that Vernon Street and West Branch would be the ideal location for a well. Where in that area would, I don't know at this point. But that would be one of the but as far as the quality, I think that there's probably the quality is probably there for irrigation purposes.
How far down are we going in regards to the city limits to the south?
A traffic way. So at the traffic way on ramp or off ramp, approximately, that's where we would begin the project.
That would probably be a nicer location and can be concealed in a well in that particular area far better than even Grand Avenue or Vernon or Oak Park.
Mm-hmm. But
as a possibility. And in reality, we would actually be offsetting the 4 acre feet.
The pump that you're using at Soto Park to pump water up there, and then I could buy some for the cemetery, and you could have this also. And I'd give you clear. I'd free up another 50 acre feet for you.
Well, that's certainly possible. The bleeder line is just that, though. It bleeds off when there's an excess in the pond, and it doesn't serve all the time.
You can put the well into it.
We might have to upsize the pump, but it's certainly possible.
Well, I'm not so sure you should be quiet. This is a. Is there? Do we have the ability to use untreated water for this project, given our current system, as opposed to treated water that that we're already sort of maxed out on? I mean, can we accomplish this with an untreated water source, regardless of where it comes from?
Depending on the quality of the water, yes, you could use something other than potable water. It would certainly have to be filtered because of the drip irrigation system has fine heads that require clean water. But the quality of the water can be something other than potable water, certainly.
Is it economically feasible to propose this to Caltrans and have them buy into it?
Well, I can't speak for Caltrans, but I think that they would certainly want to look at it. We have talked about a well. We talked about where we could put it. They didn't seem to be too interested in that. We talked about water down at the pond and right adjacent to the Carl's Jr. There's a weir structure there that holds back water. That's not a year-round source, and the quality is such that it has to be filtered, finely filtered, because it comes out of a surface water supply. We talked about state water. We talked about wheeling of other water through our system. And although they were interested, it didn't seem to be as feasible or as easy as using potable water, of course. Now, they will be paying for the water. We're not giving them the water, so that I wouldn't want to make that distinction that they are paying for the water.
I would imagine, Don, if you put a well in play and the pressure system that you'd have to have there for that, you'd be looking at probably $50,000.
I would think probably a little bit more than that.
When they can get it for $800 an acre foot now, round figures.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that what I do think that there is an option for is that we could allow them to connect at this point and then continue to look for other sources. And when other sources do become available, that we do hook them up to another source. One of the things that we talked about in those 17 items or options that we brought to the council a couple weeks ago, was the fact that Caltrans was going to be doing this landscaping, and that would be a perfect source where we could put non-potable water. The second, we'd have to look at, you know, that's not a continuous source. That source of water is actually used for other things, including the Soto Sports Complex. And at times, because of the way we draw water out of that pond too, that becomes not available. We have to use the well that we have there, that irrigation well. So,
what about the enlarged poplar?
The Poplar Ponding Basin is another source. However, that goes dry during certain times of the year where the water's at.
It's much larger now, so we have more capacity.
We definitely have more capacity. But I don't know how that's going to work as far as, how the water will infiltrate into the ground. And then when you have these landscape projects, you want to have a source that's going to establish the plant and keep it going so that you don't have all these things die on you. And so you want to have some sustainable source of water at least the beginning.
We've also been trying to identify a site for a future potential basin in this immediate area that mm-hmm. we could serve, since there's a drainage need there anyway. And could also serve the cemetery and some of these other things. But that's something we've identified, some alternative sites that we're looking at, but still down the road a little bit in terms of actually doing a project. So probably the best point is these are things we could pursue, but maybe we could have the Caltrans project go ahead with a continuance of planning and having them switch over to a different water source at some future point in time.
Well, we pretty much beat this to death. There are no members of the public here. So what's the will of the council?
Well, Mr. Mayor, I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of the fact that we do have a critical situation coming up this next year if we don't get some rain and whatnot. And I'm kind of reluctant to get pushed into a place where you're going to take and spend 10 acre feet of water irrigating a bunch of weeds along a freeway when it can be used for something else. So. But I think everybody has heard me speak about that and knows where I feel. So if it's got to be, it's got to be. But
I'd make a recommendation, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the relocation of the water meter and allow the Caltrans use of this water. However, we state our intent that when non-potable water is available, it be switched over to that. And also build in a clause that should city water usage exceed 97% or whatever is the appropriate figure, that they cease and desist using that water and go back to using a truck until the water usage goes back down below that point.
We do have provisions in our ordinance that when we get to a certain percentage, that landscaping be turned off. And I think I would recommend that we follow that. I don't know what the percentage is, but I would recommend that we follow the ordinance to the amount of whenever it gets to whatever that percentage is.
I think it says it's turned off on certain days.
There is a point where it gets odd and even days, but then there's a point where it becomes critical and it gets turned off completely. So.
Is that a motion?
Well, I'll make that a motion.
Okay. We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Further discussion?
Discussion, Mr. Mayor, I would like to add to that motion, if at all possible, aside some dollars for future development of non-potable water use. That would be, I think, extremely helpful for us.
Mr. Mayor, I'll amend my motion to include language that we discuss the options and possibilities with Caltrans to partner on finding non-potable sources and seeking funding from them to such extent as possible.
Okay. Is the second hold?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none.
Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Lubin?
Yes.
Councilmember Reynolds?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, takes us to item number 12, council member items. We have none this evening. City manager items? Council communication.
I'd just like to relay one thing.
Sure.
When you gentlemen start talking about the Valley Road project, be sure to invite all the property owners adjacent to all this stuff to participate. Thank you.
Okay. I have a couple of quick things that I'd like to just leave with you, Steve, to pursue. And this is just information. I'm not recommending anything at this point, but I attended the mayor's meeting last Friday in Atascadero, and there were a couple of things that came up. One was presented by Mayor Dave Romero from San Luis Obispo, and San Luis Obispo City Council passed two resolutions. One was a resolution of this council of the city of San Luis Obispo requesting that the elected representatives of the United States and the state of California allocate funds to research, monitor, and eliminate West Nile virus in California. Second related resolution was a resolution of the Council of the City of San Luis Obispo requesting that the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors support the formation of a vector control district and to deal specifically with disease aspects and rodents and pests and potential West Nile virus mosquito abatement, that sort of thing. So the request was made that we present these resolutions to each of our councils with some consideration of some future support for this, and I'm told that this particular item is going to be presented to the Board of Supervisors. I asked Dave about this, whether they felt that a separate control district, a special district, was in our best interests, or perhaps an expansion of the vector control activity that County Health already does. And he said either way it would be okay as long as they address the problem. So I don't know what we want to do with this. I'll leave it with you, Steve, and you know, if we want to further communicate this or bring this back or whatever the case may be, but I wanted to alert you that there was some support for it from ZUP to promote a drug-free environment and alcohol-free environment and that sort of thing. So there are going to be several activities coming up, and so the council may decide to take a few steps to promote this particular activity and perhaps a resolution and a special presentation to Ms. Nelson. There are some other recommended activities, so I'll leave this with you as well, Steve, and we can see what we want to do with them. That's pretty much it. Okay, any other council communication? If not, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you.
No. 16.
Sorry about that. I'm not in a hurry to get out of here.
I'm sorry,
just wanted to take one important minute to announce, obviously, to the council and to the community that the reminder to everyone, the Harvest Festival is next week, 24th and 25th. So deadlines are coming up for people getting applications in for their booths and their parade applications. Hopefully we're have council members participating in the parade or booths or something. But anyways, wanted to announce that to the community because it's really coming along to, together well. It's going to be a real fun community event.
Very good. And there will be a scarecrow contest, too, this year. And I'm not sure if we're going to have the big pumpkin or not.
Okay.
We are. Okay.
The
great pumpkin, yes. Item 16 is a non-issue. Since we have no community present for comments and suggestions, Now can we adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you.